Grace to you and peace from God our Father and our Lord Jesus Christ. From beautiful Hotel Candelaria in Antigua, Guatemala, my name is Sean Smith, and on behalf of myself and my beautiful wife, Damaris, hello. Welcome to Now is the Time.
Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome crew number 5, numero cinco, the dorm crew at Ogar Miguel Magone this week to the podcast booth. I'm going to have them introduce themselves, starting with their fearless leader, Cato.
I'm Cato Auden from Oregon, Wisconsin.
I'm Xander Bevilacqua from State College, Pennsylvania.
I'm Annika Sandy from Oregon, Wisconsin.
And I'm Brenda Sandy from Oregon, Wisconsin.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast booth. You look very satisfied from a full meal. Some desserts made it into the podcast booth. Of course, those all have to be left here. You realize that after you leave. First-timers. I always love to talk to first-timers because we've been coming many years. Sometimes it's hard for us to see through your eyes. It's always exciting to hear like what you notice, what is interesting, what is different from what you imagined. Tell me some of your first impressions. You've been here a couple days now. You've kind of had a chance to take some of it in. Annika, what's going through your head right now?
Well, when I first arrived, obviously everything appears, you know, visually very different. It appeared like maybe not as organized as like how we live, or not necessarily like technically as clean. But then once you're here and you get to talking with, you know, like the kids at the orphanage or anywhere you go, you just start to realize more and more that the people that are here are pretty much the same as people, you know, where I live. And like we all kind of, even though we live in different places and different conditions, we all kind of have like, you know, like the same, you know, we all have our own struggles and our own triumphs and everything. And you kind of start to realize that, you know, we're not so different, even though we speak a different language. It's easy to communicate, you know, just like with your eyes and stuff. And that's been the coolest thing, is even though I don't speak Spanish that much and my Spanish is spotty, it's cool to be able to just communicate with like a smile, you know. So that's what I've realized.
Yeah, Brenda?
I just realized how loving everybody is. You know, even the adults will stop, and if they recognize someone from a previous year, they'll give a great big embrace. The children will embrace you right off the bus, the first day, the first moment, and that is really like heartwarming to see how they can trust others coming in to see them, and other adults especially. I mean, I could see how a kid would approach a child, but for a kid to approach an adult, that's really a neat experience, because in our culture, generally, kids don't approach strange adults and ask to be picked up. So that was one thing that was really neat. And the other thing that I've been struggling with is just I've come to notice that, and not necessarily at the orphanage, but just in the village, that not every child has their own bed, and that is really to me a basic need. I mean, I know, you know, kids don't need a lot of things to be happy, but a small space to call your own just seems like that everybody should be able to have that. So that was one thing that I came across today, that I realized that not all children had their own space every night, and I thought that was really different than our culture and difficult.
Yeah, you had an opportunity to go to the village too,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Tell us about that experience. How is it different from what you imagined it would be, in addition to the bed situation? Mm-hmm. And what are you going to take away from that experience?
Well, we had a lot of people from our community in the States come, so we had seen pictures. I felt that I was pretty prepared for how the conditions were in the village. But one thing I got to see that was really neat is we went into a home where the previous year our neighbor from home, Katie, installed the stove in a home. So the stove was actually working. They were cooking some beans on the stove. And I thought to myself, like, that made it livable, and I couldn't, I didn't see how it looked before, how it worked before, but I thought, you know, as a mom, you know, you have to, in this culture, you have to feed your family. It's probably a constant thing where you have that stove running from 7 a.m. till, you know, all hours of the night trying to feed your family. And I thought that that was, it seemed doable with the stove. And so I'm struggling to kind of figure out like how that would be before the stove.
Like with an open fire.
Yeah.
On a dirt floor.
Yes.
5 months out of the year indoors because it's raining every day.
Right. And I noticed that where the stove was for last year, there were still marks of gray on the wall from where the, when they were cooking on the open fire, that will never probably come off.
Yeah, it's typically about a half inch layer of black charcoal soot that just covers every wall and ceiling of the kitchen area. And you can imagine what their lungs look like.
Right. And then I was thinking probably there's a much less reduction of the amount of wood they need to use, so it's much more efficient and probably cost less to operate for them.
70% less wood.
Wow, that's amazing.
So because of that, it saves the woman of the house especially 2 days a week that they're not having to collect and carry wood.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it's dramatic.
Yeah.
It's dramatic. Annika, what were your impressions of the village?
Well, I guess I, even though I'd seen, you know, quite a few pictures of exactly what the houses there looked like and pictures of the village and pictures of the people there, it, like, you don't really, like, it doesn't, you don't come to that realization that people actually live there until you're there and you see, you know, the kids there. And when we walked up to this young girl's, Nancy's house, who the Auden sponsor, she was, they were all doing, I think, the dishes outside in like this like bin, and then we got to see their house and they all slept in one room, and basically it was just really, I guess I thought it would be more furnished, even like just from, even though I'd seen pictures, I just assumed, oh, they don't all look like that and that they would have like more space, but they pretty much just slept in one room, which was pretty appalling to me because where we come from, our culture, we pretty much, most people have their own room and their own space, and to not have that would just be, I think, difficult. And obviously the same thing with the stoves, is it's just unimaginable how to, like, to think that they had to like breathe in that air before, and how much of a difference something so little and so, you know, seemingly, you know, like not so important, like a stove could help, you know, like essentially change their lives. Like you said, it's pretty dramatic.
Yeah, yes. Our veterans here, you guys have come many years, each one of you. Xander, it's been a couple years since you've been.
It's been one, yeah.
You skipped 1 year. What's different? What do you notice that's different about the home or the kids or anything?
I feel like the kids are, like, there's a little bit more structure to the orphanage. Like, I mean, maybe it was just Karen's speech that she gave in the opening where they kind of laid boundaries for us, for the kids, and that they had some rules for the slide and for us to enforce those rules on the slide, that they couldn't just climb up, but they just would go down and use the stairs. It just seems like there's a little bit more rules.
A little more structure. Yeah.
Yeah, and that seems to, I mean, it's not any huge dramatic change, but that's a little bit of a change, which makes things look a little nicer. The paintings of the superheroes on when you first walk into the orphanage, that wasn't there when I got back, so that was nice to see. The girls' orphanage is all finished and it looks amazing. I'm so happy it turned out like that. I saw it when it was just kind of a cliff and then a few buildings when we were like
it was a cliff
flinging the cement, and it just looks like a brick building. And then it turned into a little castle, and I thought that was cute. And it's all done.
And soon there will be superheroes adorning the inside of the boys' dorm, thanks to you and your artistic talents and direction.
Thing, yeah.
How is that coming along?
It's good. We got the Spider-Man done in the one boys' room. We have a Batman and a Superman, I think it is, in another boys' room, which is, we just had to paint a fist and we're all done with that one. And then we have a Captain America taking over a big wall in the other boys' room. And that one's drawn out, but will be painted and filled in tomorrow. And so all three walls are done, hopefully by tomorrow, and that was the goal.
I don't know if you were in there when I just heard this story just secondhand that there was a kid or two that came in. They, it was the room you were working on the Spider-Man, and they were like, Spider-Man! You know, and I was like, yeah, like they were so excited, you know.
Just, I think Christina said something about that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to make you feel awesome.
It makes me feel happy, yeah, that they're excited about that. There were a lot of paintings in that room, and I was nervous I couldn't live up to them, but it turned out really well, and I was happy about it. And Christina and my other friend, what's her name?
Mariah,
both were really, really useful in helping me get that going, and they did a super good job in filling that in.
You mentioned Karen's talk on Monday, and I want to ask you about this, Cadel, as well. You mentioned Karen. She usually shares some of her testimony, a little bit about the home, maybe some case studies. I wasn't able to be there on Monday. We were running around trying to prep some stuff. But every time I hear Karen, I guess it's been 9 out of the 10 years I've heard this talk, I always hear something different. Like, I'm always amazed that there's a piece of information you'd think after 9 speeches, you know. Plus, sometimes she comes here on our off weeks, like weeks 2 through 4, and shares about the home. So I could write a short book about, you know, the home. But I always pick up something new. Is there something new that you learned about what she shared, or a case study, like a kid?
It was just completely different. She didn't give the backstory too much of the orphanage. She gave more of their goals and what they're trying to do with the kids. Some of the stories of some of the kids.
Can you share one or two of those that you remember, Xander?
The stories of the kids. There was a boy, they called him Gato. And it's not really like his backstory, but what he's struggling with of just not being able to speak. I'm sure I'm mixing in another person's story. But it was just essentially, if I am mixing the stories, then you get the idea. But his mom would drug him or something to keep him quiet all night or all day while she could hold him and beg for money. And then I think she give him some sort of alcohol.
Paint thinner, so that she could, you know, pretend like it was a baby up until he was 4.
So he couldn't speak anymore. So
he was
never learned anything babies learned, and so now he just hits kids, takes things, cries when he wants something. He's just
because he can't express himself verbally.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so now they're trying to teach him that, and so they talked about how they're trying to guide him in a more positive direction. And she just kind of focused on the forward and the future goals of the orphanage rather than telling the backstory of Karen. And so it was really a different story altogether, and you weren't there.
Was there something that you picked up from that, Cadel, as well?
I actually wasn't there for the talk either. Estuardo took all the crew leaders, so I wasn't there for Karen's talk. But I guess I kind of have noticed between Karen and Estuardo as well, kind of the same thing that Xander's saying is, I almost feel like they're more worried about or more concerned with the future and really moving the kids forward. And like Estuardo, I've heard mentioned a couple times about breaking the cycle, which Turk was also talking about as well. And I think it's different than the feeling I've had the last couple of years, which has been more like they just want to help. Like, they just want to help them and kind of help soothe their wounds and just kind of help them get by instead of really helping them get out of this cycle, which is, I think, is great. I think that's what they should be doing. And it's not easy, but I feel like they're really trying to help them get to a better place. And the other thing I've been amazed by that I'm sure has been true the last couple of years, I just didn't really notice it as much until this year, is just how much Karen and Estuardo know about every single kid. So like just, I mean, you ask them about any kid and just off the top of their heads, they tell you their whole life story and more. And that's amazing to me with all the kids, and it shows how much they really do care about them. And I knew that because they always show how much love they really do have for the kids. But I've noticed it this year. I've really noticed it a lot these last couple of days, just with how much they care about every single kid.
It's true. They know every story, and you think, well, 50, you know, I think I was a teacher. You have 30 to 50, you know, if you're high school, I was a high school teacher, you have about 120 kids, you know. And so over the course of a year, you get to know quite a bit about the students, right? But it's not just 50 kids. It's 50 kids today. But they have kids coming and going every month, every week. There's a new group of kids or a new, you know, a new family, brother and sister, what have you. So you're talking about hundreds of children that go through there in the course of a year. And they do. They know, like, all the not only all the details about the family and stuff, but every time Karen... So some of the kids are responsible enough to have some money. And they can, you know, they try and teach them responsibility with that money. And Karen knows the account of every kid. Like, kids come, you know... I can't tell you how many times a kid has come up and said... you know, can I have $1.25 so I can, not dollar, kids Holly's right, $1.25 so I can go buy, you know, this at the store. And she's like, you don't have $1.25. You know you don't have $1.25. And she knows every penny that these kids have. I mean, the detail of, especially Karen's memory, but both of them, I mean, they try to play one off the other, like kids play off their parents, you know, like, well, you know, Storna said, I said, no, he didn't. Yeah. So that is their attention to detail. And
the other thing I noticed was that she also not only does the kids in the home, but she knows, like, all the kids in the village that are still living with their parents and where they are in things, you know, kids that come for meals or lessons or just to hang. I mean, she's kind of got an open door policy for kids that have, you know, needs and are respectful of the rules. I mean, I'm sure she, you know, has, like, you know, she doesn't let in everybody, but, you know, she is very open to the community, too. So that's really neat.
Cato, this is your third year, is that right? You come again with your family, and this year you're on the leadership crew, and there's been some challenges with that. Talk about that transition, the difference of coming as a crew member the past 2 years, and sitting at this table each evening, and just the responsibility that comes with that, and some of the challenges and some of the triumphs.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first one that I noticed was leading up to the mission, there was a lot of, like, preparation to do, which I did not do the last 2 years. And even if I, you know, even if I wasn't going to be a crew leader, I, you know, I helped my mom with a lot of the VBS stuff before I knew that I was going to be a crew leader, and it's been a lot more stressful, I guess, but not, it's like good stress, I guess you could say, because it's something I need to think about. I had to do a lot of planning beforehand, and I think that's helped me get the most out of it.
Describe some of the planning that you did and what you were helping your mom do.
Well, helping my mom was basically filling hundreds of plastic Ziploc bags with very small things. Like, we filled 700 Ziploc bags with 2 Swedish fish each, and then, you know, sealed all the bags and put them in boxes.
This was for the crafts for VBS.
Yes, that was for the crafts for VBS.
Not just for this week.
No, for all the weeks.
For all 3 weeks that we're doing.
Yeah, so that was one evening right there. And then,
the Swedish fish evening.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other thing was planning for the games for VBS, which Christina and me have been working together on trying to get a plan for that. So, you know, I emailed her with some ideas and talked to her for a while beforehand. And you know how everything goes here. The best part is, like, you know, I had this nice elaborate plan for the game we were going to do today, and we talked about it this morning. We were like, there's no way we're doing that based on yesterday and how crazy it was. We were like, no, we're not doing that. There's no way. So we talked about it during lunch and during our prep hour that we had before VBS today, and totally changed it. Came up with two new games, and
really,
it went really well. Actually, it went better than yesterday. So it's just funny, you know, because it's just kind of how it goes sometimes. But
how it goes here all the time.
Yes, how it goes here most of the time. Yeah.
I mean, you have a plan, and then something happens.
Right.
Talk a little bit about the challenge with the language from yesterday and today. And the thing I was most impressed with that I really want to emphasize is the solution that you guys came up with and how that went today.
Yeah, so yesterday we had me and Christina and Mariah and Annika, who we all have, like, you know, good Spanish, like decent, and we can converse with kids and with adults, and we can communicate to a certain degree. But describing how to play a game, like trying to describe how to play charades in Spanish is, there's no chance with the level of Spanish that I have. We just, you know, it's just too hard. We can give them like very basic instruction using like the limited verbs that we know, whatever we've learned, whatever we've memorized in Spanish class, but it's just not the same as, you know, actually being able to communicate with them like a fluent speaker does. So we struggled with that yesterday. And actually, how we were struggling with that for a short period of time, trying to figure out how to explain it to them, trying to, you know, Christina trying to distract them while we were trying to figure out, like, how to describe the next game to them. And then Mariah was like, well, why don't we try and demonstrate it? So she started, like, we were going to do charades, so she started, like, pretending to be a monkey, like, acting like a monkey, and I was going to, like, start guessing animals so that they could kind of get the idea of the game. And right away when she started doing that, like, five of the girls sitting in front of her all shouted out monkey in Spanish, which I don't remember what it is.
Mono.
Yeah, so they all shouted that out right away. She was like, yes, like, perfect. So then we didn't even have to explain it after that. They figured it out. So then we, like, asked for volunteers, and they came up, and we'd give them an animal, and they'd act it out, and then they started guessing. So it's like, you know, sometimes you don't need to talk to them. And once they figured out, you know, what the idea of the game was, they got really into it and screaming. And then we made it into a competition between the two sides. And one side would get really mad if we said that the other side got the point because they got it first. So that was amusing. But it was a struggle with being able to communicate with them. And then last night at our leader meeting, we thought, you know, maybe Danilo can help us, because Danilo is... He's 18. He's a kid that I met my first year, and
he used to live in the home.
Yeah, and he used to live there, and he's sponsored by the Bevilacquas, and they've been paying for English class for him. And last year I talked to him. The last day he came back to the hotel here last year, and I talked to him for a while, and I was really impressed. Like, wow, we had like almost a normal conversation in English. And then this year, I talked to him the first day on Monday, I was talking like this. Like, I didn't have to alter the way I was talking to him at all. I just talked to him like this, and he understood it all. And, you know, sometimes there's a couple words he doesn't know in English. But so anyway, we thought, well, maybe he can help us. So I talked to him this morning, and I was like, are you going to be here today? He was like, yeah. And I said, would you be able to help with us for the games for VBS? And he was like, yeah, for sure. And I said, okay, can you describe them the games in Spanish? Like, can you, in the microphone? He's like, no microphone. He's like, he's kind of shy.
Really?
Yeah, he's pretty shy. Like, he went into the village today, and my mom told me that she tried to get him to translate when Nancy's mom was talking to my mom, and he would like didn't really want to. So, and I'm not sure exactly.
He was uncomfortable about what she was asking.
Okay.
To translate.
Okay. Yeah, my mom said he told her eventually.
Yeah.
But, oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. So he's just kind of... He's kind of uncomfortable sometimes.
Sorry, one of the phones are
So anyway, he was like, no microphone. I was like, okay, well, you can just tell one of us what to say, and he'll say it. So then we started, and... let's see, the first game we played... What was the first game we did with the older kids? Okay. I think we did a race, a ball, like a game where we split them up into boys and girls Because then we knew they'd get really competitive. And had a couple of the boys with the girls go with the girls because there were a few more boys. And then had like a ball in the middle. And we numbered them off from one to however many there were. There were 32 on each side. And then we'd like say a number, and that number from each side would run to the and try and get the ball and bring it back to their side. And whoever grabbed it first, the person from the other side would try and tag them before they got back to their side. And if they did, then they wouldn't get the point. But if they got the ball and made it back, they'd get a point. So, and I explained that to Danilo during the our prep hour, and it took a little while. And then eventually he's like, okay, yeah, I got it. So then we started off, and he was basically telling us what to say. And it wasn't, you know, it was just kind of slow. Like, we'd say, okay, we need to say this. He's like, okay, say this, this, and this. And
it was just that half second behind.
Right, exactly, exactly. And Mariah's like, no, you say it. He's like, no, you say it. So, you know, stuff like that. Because it was just frustrating. It's like, why can't you just say it? Because he's telling us what to say. He's like whispering it to me, and then I'd say it in the microphone, or someone would. And then I'm not sure. I didn't really ask him why he did it all of a sudden, but we were like kind of struggling. The kids weren't really listening. And he took the microphone and just started talking, and just for like 2 minutes straight. Just like, okay, you know, do this, do this, do this. You guys go here. Just like totally instructed. And we're like, finally. Like, and I don't know for sure, but it seemed like he got frustrated. Like he was like, oh, yeah. you guys have no idea what you're doing. So he just took the microphone. And then he did the rest of the game. And we'd tell him kind of what we wanted, and he'd explain it to him, and it went really well. And he was awesome. He was very helpful. So, yeah, it wasn't, you know, the first solution I would have thought of for that was get this kid from the orphanage who has taken English lessons, but it ended up working out really well. And he said he can help us the rest of the week, so which will be awesome. I'm really happy about that. So, yeah, that was a really fun and very good learning experience as well.
You guys have any final thoughts for listeners, family members, or church members, supporters back home that you might want to share, or people who've just never been to Hogar Miguel or to a village like Aguacate? Any final thoughts you'd like to share with them?
I guess I just think that it's like you don't really understand in like what it's like maybe to like, I mean, I guess I didn't understand like what it's like to like live like this, like these kids. And something I noticed today is this one boy that I was talking to, he is so nice, and he lives at this orphanage, which isn't optimal, but he makes the best out of everything. And you know, maybe a lot of these kids don't have a mom or a dad or neither, and or they're back and forth from the orphanage to their house, or and what little they can call their house even then. And but they're still all so happy, and that's something that I don't even see where I go to school or in my community, where we have, you know, so much more than any of these children or any of these people here do. But they seem, you know, to be happier, you know, overall, and they make the best out of every situation, and you know, they all love each other. And that's another thing I notice is how much the older boys, I guess, because there's not that many older girls, but they take care of the younger ones, and they're always, you know, reaching around them to embrace them. And that's just something that's very special that I think that maybe because they have less material possessions, they value each other more, and they take care of each other. And I think that's something that we miss because we focus so much on material things in the United States. And that's something that I'll definitely take away from that, is to value, you know, the people more, and, you know, love, you know, each other, and to, like, really value our situation and make the best out of everything.
Well said. Other thoughts? Lots of smiles and nodding.
Yeah. Very good experience. I mean, just eye-opening and heartwarming. All at, you know, lots of things. The weather's cooperated, so we've been very blessed with that. And just overall, a great experience in my book.
My book too. You guys rock. If we don't have a chance before you leave to say this, I want to say it now on behalf of Don Maurice and myself. Thank you. Thank you for your service to our Lord, to His children here in Guatemala, Olga Miguel Magone, the village of Aguacate, the children that are here this week that you have been lovingly serving and guiding and taking care of. We could not do this work without you. It's impossible. And we're truly honored to have you join us and work side by side with us. So thank you, and thank you for sharing your thoughts and your stories here in the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's all the time we have for now from Antigua, Guatemala. If you'd like more information about our mission, team photos, audio podcasts, blog posts, or even YouTube videos, visit our mission website at nowisthetimeformissions.com. That's nowisthetimeformissions.com. And until next time, this is Sean Smith saying Dios te bendiga, may God bless you. Vaya con Dios, go with God. Pero no inmediatamente.